From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest has made some pretty unusual films in the past. Golly, it's been more than a decade now, but I think he came to most of our attention 10 years ago with Dogtooth. And, of course, there's The Lobster. We had Colin here for that film. And Killing of a Sacred Deer's new film, you may have heard about, is The Favourite. Of course, I'm talking to the director, Yorgos Lanthimos. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we were talking a little bit before we got started about rehearsal. And one of the things that seems interesting to me is that the actors are kind of playing against a kind of a physical goal to just so the lines feel more natural to them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it does a lot of things when you work like that with actors. I mean, I always try to have as much time as I can before we start filming with the actors. And I learned through my theater years that I directed a few plays in the theater how to try and get to the goal that I have in mind with actors. So we do a lot of physical games and exercises, and it serves a number of things, I think. Well, one is that it creates a certain kind of synchronicity, a physical synchronicity between the actors, and they get familiar with each other and each other's rhythm. They get comfortable with each other, and the other thing is they learn the text, the dialogue, through that process. So they're not really focused on what the dialogue means and what the intention is. They're just focused in trying to just say it, you know, whatever way it comes out. And when they're at the same time having other things to do, it becomes quite abstract in a way, the way that they're trying to say their lines. So it gets into their minds through a different door, and it's not rationalized and it's not memorized in a specific way that makes sense. So when we actually go and film, they're free to do whatever they want with it, and it's all fresh to them. And the situation changes, of course, because they're not playing games anymore, but they're in the actual situation where they have to say the words. So I think it comes from a more interesting place, a more unconscious and subconscious place, and it becomes more real in a way. Not naturalistic or realistic, but it has a truth to it.
Because I really felt that in Dogtooth, you know, that sort of game thing that you're talking about, it really makes, because you're actors, people who hadn't acted before, really, and getting them past the idea of what an actor is supposed to do, giving them these physical goals really helps to relax them, does it not?
Yeah, I mean, in Dogtooth, most of them were actors, but that's a film where it actually made even more sense, the games and everything, because we were basically trying to bring them back into a very naive, childlike state. So playing games helped a lot, and we actually did that to an extreme. So they would be bored to death by playing games, and they did nothing else, and they knew nothing else other than playing games and trying to invent games, like, and come up with games with whatever they had to their disposal in this house.
Because I think of your films as being really about power and how often young people can be really cruel with power. And this gives an interesting way from the play that, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, someone needs to defy power and rules and the way that the world is constructed. So I guess, you know, young people are the candidates to do that.
But it's almost like the young people don't really understand the power they have in some ways. I was thinking about Sacred Deer, or certainly here in The Favourite, the way that young people can be just really kind of offhanded and cruel. I think about the shoving that goes on in this movie, or this way young people really are kind of physical.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about how that idea of young people just being almost cruel with the way they use power is interesting.
I don't know if it's conscious, though, from young people. It comes from a certain kind of energy. And
naivete.
Yeah, yeah. It could be that they don't think about it too much. You know, the older you get, you know, the more experience you have, you start thinking about things more, and I guess you're afraid more. not to be burned. So, yeah, I think, you know, young people can be braver and they don't think of the consequences so much.
That's interesting because it's so big a part of what you do.
In The Killing of a Sacred Deer, I guess I have to say that, yeah, having someone so young being in control of a mature person's life who's so successful.
And also an authority figure, too, being the mature person.
So, yeah, a very successful heart surgeon, and then there's this, you know, 16-year-old kid that all of a sudden takes control of his life and is able to destroy it. That, of course, was, you know, very conscious, that a conscious decision to show the even greater divide, you know, between the two of them, and the greater absurdity of someone so young being able to do what the character did in that film.
But I guess I wonder about this. By the way, it's the treatment. We're talking about Power with my guest Yorgos Lanthimos. His new film, of course, is The Favorite. But I just find that the idea of trying to find power is such a prevalent theme in your work.
Yeah, I guess it's because it's all around us. I mean, all kind of relationships and smaller societies within societies, they all have the same structure.
And they're often about smaller societies within societies, your pieces too, aren't they?
Yeah, I think that's how you can approach stories and how the themes. I think you can get more into detail when you're trying to see the smaller, the detail within the great thing. I think it reveals a lot. And as a, you know, as we discussed before, just because of everything in society is pretty much structured in a similar way, there's always these, you know, power games, and people who do have power, the people that are trying to acquire it, the people that face repercussions from other people trying to acquire power. So it's very common in every, you know, any era, any situation, any different kind of part of society.
But so often your work, text and subtext, and that idea of this, the way people are grappling for power in these insulated communities, really. I mean, and then you ask questions about why they're so insulated in the first place. I just find really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, why do you find it fascinating?
Because it's something that people tend to not do. And, you know, taking us inside of a world, which is something you've done in every single film, is almost like these people are isolated from the world. I mean, in The Favorite, we see lives are being lost, all of these games that are being played, and this almost, as you're saying, abstract use of power. And I just think it's a really interesting thing that plays out in the work. And it's, I guess it fascinates me that it's not really a conscious thing for you.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, I mean, I wouldn't know how else to explore these things other than, you know, focusing on such groups of people or individuals or... So, you know, with The Favorite, the thing that caught my attention initially was... This intimate story of these three women. Well, the fact that it was three women, that's something that you don't really see that often. The fact that it actually happened at some point in time, that these three women had great power. But mostly, you know, what each one individually went through and their personalities and their characters and their personal story and how they interacted. And then... The most important thing is how, you know, this intimate story could, you know, through that intimate story, you could show how an individual or two can affect the lives of so many other people. And that's, you know, when you realize that, you know, it's a story that, you know, you can relate with, you know, much bigger themes. And that's why it's worth, you know, making it and exploring it. So, yeah, the intimate in conjunction with the great is something that I find quite interesting.
As you were talking about The Favorite, you could be describing almost any one of your films. I mean, I think that's really fascinating. I'm not trying to be reductive about this at all, but I think that there is something that is almost an immediate strength of yours. I even think back to Kinetta. It really is about playing games and even playing games with audience expectations and the power that comes from doing something like that.
Yeah, I guess that's the rawest form of what I do, Kinetta. And yeah, it's true. Well, the thing is, The Favorite is quite literally about, you know, the individual having an effect on millions of other people. I mean, in maybe in other films, you see a representation of society and you understand things about the greater society. But in The Favorite especially, it's literally, you know, the one person or the two or three people that actually affect the fate of a war, how many people die and how and when do they stop it and when they can. And just because of their, you know, just because of their mood at a certain time, they can make a decision that affects the lives of millions of other people. So it's very literal, and it's also quite even scarier that it's a true story, and it's even scarier that it feels that it's very similar to today.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because we were talking before we got started. You worked on this for almost 10 years,
yeah.
And it feels like so many of the building blocks that end up being a part of this movie were things you found as you made other movies, if that makes sense at all.
Yes. And it's, you know, it also shows that, you know, this kind of story is quite timeless because, I mean, maybe it feels even more relevant now, but it was, you know, it felt interesting to me back then when we started, like 10 years ago, when we started developing it. And that's another interesting thing when you, you know, you watch films through the prism of your era or the times that you live in, and you obviously associate them with what's happening during this time. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, what will happen, you know, tomorrow or in the next 10 years, and how someone that will view my films 10 years later, how they will associate them with what's happening at that time. But hopefully you make something that's timeless and feels relevant and has many different meanings and levels to it that people can actually relate to it no matter when, in which moment in time they see it.
Well, one thing we've learned in the past few years, nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow nowadays.
Yeah, that's true.
But I guess I just find, too, as you're talking about timeless, there's a timeless sense to all of your movies. They could be happening at any period. I mean, even this movie, just because the dialogue is so anachronistic, it could be happening any time. And that idea of, again, confounding what the ear expects in a certain way is something I think about coming from experimental theater.
Yeah, could be. I guess, you know, you develop certain tastes as you grow up.
And techniques, too.
And techniques.
And also, too, the idea of people bringing to it what they want, what they bring to it rather than being told what to expect in it. I mean,
yeah, exactly. And you see that what I love, you know, about certain aspects of my films is like people are sometimes asking me, what did that mean and what does this mean? And I'm not trying to annoy people by saying I really don't know. I mean, I could give you an answer, but it's going to be so limiting and so disappointing, you know, the specific thing that I'm thinking about my film. It's so much more interesting to see what all these different people bring with them. And if you allow that with how you've structured the film, if you allow them to have their own thoughts about it, to engage with it actively, to see what they think, how they feel, or bring their moods and their knowledge and into the film and change its meaning, that's, you know, the greatest thing about making films or any kind of art, I guess.
We'll take a break. We're talking about questions from my guest, Yorgos Lanthimos. His new film as director is The Favorite. It's a treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're throwing out questions with my guest, Yorgos Lanthimos. It's a treatment. His new film, of course, is The Favorite. And I think part of that, too, is that you set these films in these worlds that feel almost isolated from everything else. I mean, it's The Favorite starts really big and gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And in some ways, the emotional stakes in all the films are like that, where they're really big and they narrow and focus and focus and focus, don't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, especially in The Favorite, I mean, you need to show the scale, the what's at stake when you have these people in such positions. So when you have a queen and people that run a country. But of course, I guess we've, you know, touched upon it before. Like, it's the more intimate part of it that I'm interested in. And through that, showing the repercussions that intimate stories can have to the greater world. So, you know, that kind of format and form starting from a bigger picture and basically laying out what the situation is and what the stakes are and then going deeper and deeper into the characters or the situation is always, you know, what interests me most.
It's interesting, too, because I just find that these movies, as they get smaller and smaller, or rather more intimate, I mean to say, the settings change, too, and so they become almost entirely interior by the end. People really aren't going outside anymore.
Yeah. I think there's probably a clarity to that, or even if you're in an exterior, but you have, you know, you don't populate it too much or you don't make it busy enough.
Or too busy.
Or too busy, yeah. There's a clarity to what you're showing. And it might feel removed from reality a little bit, but I was never really interested in realism when you're making films. I think you can find truth, you know, through a different way, and you can engage in a different way when you're watching something that doesn't necessarily feel it's, you know, taken out of life exactly as it is. I think you can observe other things about human beings and behavior.
Well, that's really what the lobster is, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, because there it's you see, again, a smaller part of the society, you assume how the rest of it is, but you don't really see it. But then you can really study and observe what's going on in this part of the world.
And I guess, too, I wonder if you have that conversation with the actors about trying to get them to find truth rather than trying to be real or talk to them about the depiction that you're looking for.
No, I try to stay away from these discussions. I think...
You think they're dangerous?
I think they're dangerous in the way that things will become too self-conscious and too obvious when we're striving for something very specific that we've intellectualized and articulated. I think, you know, human beings are so complex and, you know, they don't necessarily realize what they do, why they do it, when they do it. So to sit down with, you know, with actors, especially when, you know, the whole game is rigged and we know where we're going and we know what we're doing, it's the worst thing to, you know, specify things even more. I like, you know, uncertainty on set. I like uncertainty in the actors' performances. I like danger, not knowing where we're going. And I like freedom. And that's why, as we discussed in the beginning, we work more physically and try to free them from any rationalization of their character and their dialogue and how they have to say things and how they have to do things. And try and bring a certain kind of spontaneity back, a kind of freedom and, you know, naivety that might have been lost because, you know, you've studied a character and you've read a script and you've thought about how you're going to do certain things. You know, the best thing, I think, is to try and wipe all that out and start fresh.
It's the treatment. We're talking about truth and ambiguity with my guest Yorgos Lanthimos. His new film is, of course, The Favorite. I guess as we're talking about this, though, one of the things I find so fascinating about your work is that the stakes in emotional terms are often so big that they feel surreal or absurd. And you're smiling now as I say that.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not interested in absolute realism. I think you
but
can...
But the reactions are real, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I think the whole setup, though, it's quite free. You know, the rules of the world are slightly bent in most of the films that I make. It doesn't necessarily
in
mean
all the films that you make.
It doesn't necessarily mean that it's science fiction or an alternative world, but.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that it's almost something that borders on melodrama, except it's not exactly played straight.
Yeah. I mean, or too straight.
Or
played too straight.
Exactly. But I mean, even that is a way of sort of playing with the rules. And there's a part of you that feels to me that you love to sort of confound audience expectations. Mm. There are kind of, and you're smiling as I say that too.
No, it's my expectations that I want to confound. It's not the audience. It's just like I don't want to be bored. I don't want to be obvious. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be watching things that, you know, tell me specific things that I have to think or feel. I welcome ambiguity. I love it when I see it. You know, I enjoy things in art when, you know, they ask you to make some of the work. You know, not everything is delivered to you on a plate, and this is what it is, and this is how you should feel, and this is what it means. And then I have no interest. You know, I want to create stories, images, situations that are intriguing, that people can, you know, somehow and for whatever reason relate to, and then figure out how they relate to them and how they feel, and be confused and entertained, and keep them in their minds for longer than the, you know, that the time they're actually, you know, watching the film, if possible.
And that ambiguity, too, gives a chance for people to, when you see the film a few years later, it has a different kind of resonance, doesn't it? I mean, that's what art is supposed to do, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it relates to what we were saying before, that if you make it and it's open enough and it feels kind of timeless, then people later, or even if they watch it like a week later, or even if the conditions that they watch it under are different, I think that affects how they perceive the film, and the film changes with every screening. And I think it's, in a weird way, it's very much like theater, because theater, you know, a performance literally changes, because obviously, you know, the actors cannot do the exact same thing.
And they don't feel the exact same way from night to night.
Yeah, every night, and the audience affects them. But I think it's very similar with cinema as well, no matter how strange it seems. I think, you know, when you watch a film with other people, they do affect the way you watch a film. And the atmosphere within the audience, you know, affects the effect that a film can have on that audience. And sometimes, you know, it's positive, sometimes it's negative. Sometimes the film feels more like a comedy and feels funnier. Sometimes it feels much darker. But I love that about it. And I it's great when you've created a film that it's so fine that it can go either way with different audiences and different people, or at different moments in time, or in different nights or different venues. It can, you know, go to this direction or it can go to that direction. And that's about, you know, creating that tone, which is so fine that it can break, you know, at any moment, or it can go towards whatever direction.
Because I feel, and I've been telling people for years about Kinetta, it's one of my favorite films.
Just
because it asks so much of us.
It's my wife's favorite film of mine.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? What does she say about it to you?
She loves it. I mean, she saw it quite a few years ago, and I think she, you know, it's close to her heart.
Is it close to yours?
Well, I mean, I guess it's hard for me to... I don't watch my films after I finish them. And
I know you said that before. It's just hard to... Do you see the things you weren't able to do when you watch them again?
Yeah, and all the, you know, all the things that could have been better, and all the things you were intending to do different. Not that everything that you intended to do is better than, you know, what the film ended up being. Some of it is better, but it's just a feeling that you can always have done a better film. And you see all the stitches and everything you've done, and basically you feel like you've conned everyone into believing that you know what you're doing, and that this is like a very precise, you know, piece of work. And it's basically, you know, people just running around trying to get the pieces together and, you know, fool everyone into believing that this is a precise piece of work. So I see all of these things, and I can't, you know, have the distance to watch it as someone, you know, as a film that I haven't made. So I need a lot of distance, and obviously Kinetta is the most distant film that I've made. So I was able to watch it. There was a screening a few years ago at Tate Modern, and we brought the print from Greece, and I just checked, you know, a reel of the print, and I saw a little bit of it. And, you know, it's like this, there's a certain kind of nostalgia about it. And, but you also have the distance to see a few things, and, you know, you sometimes you can go, oh, it's not that bad. You know, that part of it is actually quite great. And you've forgotten a lot of the things, you know, like 13, 14 years later. Yeah, you were able to have a certain kind of distance. But I interrupted you. You were going to say about Kineta.
No, I was just, you said plenty here, because I just find that it's a film that I was struck by. It was its austerity and its confidence. And it's something, those are two things that I associate with. So I was asking you about Bergman before, just because there is that same feeling, no matter what genre he's working in, the kind of almost detachment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Kineta was, you know, quite a special case because it was my first feature film. I had spent years making, you know, hundreds of commercials in Greece, and that's how I learned, you know, the technical aspect of filmmaking. And me and my friends that we were working in commercials and made Kineta, we were very confident about the technical aspect of it. But there was also this, you know, urge to do everything in the opposite way as, you know, we were making when we were making commercials. So there was that this kind of intense reaction, you know, towards what we've been making for all these years, and also the fact that we didn't have any money. You know, in Greece there wasn't any expectation. There were not that many films being made. Young people didn't necessarily get funded to make films. I mean, very few people got funded to make films anyway. So there was that aspect of it that ourselves, just as friends, like 5-6 friends, we're just going to make this film with nothing. We're just going to get a camera and 3 actors and go to this place. You know, there were a lot of things, you know, that make that film what it is. And naivete as well. Like, I'm going to do crazy things and whatever I want, and I'm going to be completely free, and I want to make something that's not beautiful and polished. And of course, by saying all these things, you kind of start creating a kind of a dogma, you know, like, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. So in the end, you end up with very specific rules in what you'll actually do. So at the same time, all this freedom, you know, led us to something very structured and specific. So that I think it's felt strong. The presence of that is very strong in Kineta.
It is. I'm sorry we're out of time. Please come back and do the show again. Please, it would be a pleasure to have you back here.
I will. Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure. We're talking about all kinds of things, but his most current film, of course, is The Favorite. My guest is director Yorgos Lanthimos, a recording engineer here in NPR. West is Marcia Caldwell. It's mixed by Kat Yor, edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. I'm still not free. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes with The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.